Hello and welcome to the Dancecast, where I explore dance as an art form, traveling to non-traditional places and with non-traditional doers. I'm your host and my name is Silva Lakkonen. Hey Charles, guess what?
What is it, Silva?
It is episode 10 of my Dancecast. I have made 10 episodes.
Wow, congratulations. That's quite an accomplishment. You've stuck with it.
I know. And guess what? I have 551 people listen to the episodes. Wow. 551 listens.
Wow.
And
your listeners have been sticking with it too.
I know. I have like countries like Canada, New Zealand, Israel, Denmark, Poland, Switzerland, Argentina, France, Sweden, UK, Germany, Japan, and US. People from all those countries listening to my episodes.
Wow.
Thank you so much, guys. That is so amazing. I never thought that you would have, but you did. You all did. Congrats to you, too. I mean, you have to listen to me with my accent, first of all. That's terrible. And then you have to listen to my terrible editing skills. But one good thing, there's some really awesome people that I talk to.
Mm-hmm. And that means that there's a lot of people who care very deeply about it is the things that you're talking about.
I know. That's awesome. Thanks so much, Charles, for suggesting for putting up a podcast.
It was my pleasure.
Do you want to hear about my today's guest?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So she is Morgan Teal, who is a site-specific choreographer based in Austin, Texas. Teal is artistic director and founder of Dance Waterloo. In addition, Teal is vice president of Emerging Arts Leaders of Austin and works in the College of Fine Arts at the University of Texas at Austin. Teal graduated from the University of Southern Mississippi with a BFA in dance performance and choreography. Teal site-specific works have premiered at Melissa Borrell's Public Art Skylines and Orly Guinre's Public Art Hurly Burly. Her dance films have premiered nationally in Florida, Texas, Mississippi, Arkansas, Indiana, and New York, as well as internationally in Venice, Italy, as part of the International Video Art Festival. Her creative research for dance film has been internationally recognized through Stigmart 10's Video Focus magazine. In 2015, Teal was an artist in residence in Seaside, Florida for Escape to Create, Inc., a multidisciplinary artist residency, creating the first dance film work along Florida's Emerald Coast. Teal has received East West Austin Studio Tour Fellowships, Austin Artist INC Fellowship, Gladys Kemp Lisenby Award through the National Museum of Women in the Arts, Thelma Johnson Arts Award, Emerging Artist Leader in Austin Award, and the Cultural Arts Division of Austin Community Initiatives Award. And guys, I have to tell one more thing. I know that I was supposed to deliver 3 episodes about people who do integrated dance work in the USA, and I lost one of my episodes. It was an amazing episode with Heidi Latsky and Jerome Herman. But I'm trying, we are in the process of trying to get together again and record a new one. So hold on tight, that episode will come. But now we're going to dive into a site-specific work and people who do site-specific work. And here's the first episode of all those 3. Enjoy. Hi, Morgan.
Hi.
Welcome to Dancecast.
Yay!
You know, it's been a long time since I actually recorded with somebody face-to-face because I do so many Skype calls, so it's exciting to have you here.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So Morgan is an artistic director and the founder of Dance Waterloo here in Austin. So tell me a little bit about yourself and how did Dance Waterloo start and what is your mission?
Yeah, I founded the company in January of 2015, so we're a little bit older than 2 years. Our mission is to do performances and programming in public space, almost always unconventional space, so Right now we're working in a skate park. Before that, we worked at an art installation called Hurly Burly, and it was woven lobster rope hills. And the reason we work in public space is because we can reach new audiences that way, people who love outdoors, people who are just jogging, almost always people who are skepticals of modern dance. And so we like to target those audiences to kind of bring dance to them instead of them coming to dance at a theater or something like that.
And a lot of your performances are free, or almost all of them are free.
Yeah, they're always free or donation-based, pay-what-you-can rates. So we do that to eliminate any kind of financial barrier that the audience might have. And it's also site-specific and out in the public, so people just stumble upon it. About 50% of our audience will stumble upon it. So we want to make sure that, you know, if they don't have cash on hand or anything, they can feel like they can still be a part of the performance.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, because you could definitely create some uncomfortable audience members.
Yeah.
If
I can't watch, I have to look away.
So that is really cool. I love the fact that you're site-specific and very community-oriented in a way that it's so accessible for no matter, you know, economical gap or almost always they're also accessible places because they're public places.
Yeah. In our first performance, it was at Under an Overpass in East Austin, and our last performance was downtown Austin. And now we're working in kind of like the central north area. So we've worked at a lot of places in Austin, and we don't specifically work in, you know, just the downtown area or something like that.
So it's also important for you to change the location, thinking, reaching different audiences.
Yeah, reaching different audiences, getting to know like the neighborhood there, the culture of that neighborhood is really important to us just to... for our artistic work that we're creating, getting to know who our audience is going to be.
And you also, Matt, now I just lost my thought of track. Oh my gosh. Please come back. It's not. Oh, this is it. So the site is also always informs your choreography a lot, right?
Yeah.
The site is actually almost always your inspiration, pretty much.
You know, before the idea for the dance comes, the site always comes first.
So you always know where you're going to be before you start.
And then we kind of dig into research about, like, the community there, the structure that's there, whether it's the overpass or woven lobster rope. We learn more about the structures or the environment that's there before we start creating a dance. So that the dance is fully influenced by the environment.
That is really neat aspect of it. That you and what a privilege to get to do it that way. You know?
Yeah.
I guess site-specific would be hard. Well, no, there can be impromptu site-specific that just goes out in public and dances.
Right,
yeah. But yours is very much thought and has a process behind of it.
Yeah. And I feel like it's... It makes it so meaningful to us to, like, work with community partners that are in that area. Like, right now, we're creating a dance at the skate park, and we're looking at some skate shops and ways we can get more in contact with skaters to be a part of the performance a little
awesome.
Bit. We haven't fully... we're still working through ideas on how to do that, but we want to incorporate the community that's there, the skater community. I know nothing about skating, so it's been really interesting learning things that they do.
Oh my gosh, think if you could have a wheelchair skater.
Oh, it would be so awesome.
That would be awesome.
It would be incredible.
Yeah. Oh, okay. When is it coming? When is it performed?
13th and 14th. And last week we found out we're going to be...
Which month?
Of May.
Of May. Okay.
Yeah. Not that... Well, we're past this month, but we have like 2 months to go. It's crazy. It's been going so fast. We just found out it's going to be a part of West Austin's studio tour. So it'll be a happening for that.
That's exciting. So in Austin, we have a, you can open up your home or home studio for the public to come and visit. And so you guys are going to be part of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have like, I think like 167 studios that will be open, and then like 80 gallery spaces, and then they have 9 happenings. So it's more of like performance-based or music and stuff like that.
How did you decide to start Dance Waterloo? What was your inspiration? What was your initial idea behind? Let me start my own dance company.
Well, when I moved to Austin in, when did I move here? June 2014, I graduated with my BFA in dance performance and choreography from Southern Mississippi. Southern girl. And when I moved here, I just, you know, like 6 to 8 months, I was doing independent artist work. And I was like, how do you get funding for dance? You know, and it's so slim for individual artists. So I was like, well, I'll get a fiscal sponsorship with Austin Creative Alliance. So I kind of started Dance Waterloo on accident. I was just honestly looking for a way to like get funding for my work, my choreography, but it ended up being so much more than that. Just like, and if you would have asked me in 2014, what did you want to do? Just choreograph, that's it, you know. But now it's like so much bigger than me, like the mission of Dance Waterloo, you know. It's reaching into the communities, developing relationships with people within the community through our programs and our performances, and getting to know the environment that's there, and kind of like raising awareness to that environment. A lot of the space that we'll work in is either a forgotten space or overlooked space. So we're just trying to bring fresh eyes to that space and kind of reinvigorate interest in it from the community.
That's correct. Another interesting part of your company is that you do dance classes in public art installations.
Yeah, so that program is called Dance in Public Spaces, and it is specifically tied to art in public places. And we work at public art installations. We pick a different one each month, and we contact the artist and let them know, hey, we're doing a dance class at your art installation, can you tell us more about your work? And we'll kind of interview them and get to know their process. And each installation is so different. Just like the structure is completely different, the material is used, and like the locations are completely different. Sometimes they're very easy to find, and sometimes they're like hidden in a back trail, and we all have to walk together to get to it to even take the class. But each class is an adventure that way, and you know, it's always different. So
yeah, and at least like through your classes, I have found out that there's way more art installations in Austin than I ever thought.
Yeah, there's so many. I mean, I don't have the number of them, but I know it's over 100 for sure. That's public art installations that are here in the city.
And that's a little bit about the forgotten part for sure, I feel like.
Yeah, and some of the installations, like one of them is called Open Room Austin, and it's by Roberto and Rosario, and they're based in Miami. And the art installation is a table and 4 lampposts, and it's like along Cesar Chavez Street and by Lady Bird Lake. And a lot of people know it as just like a table that you can like picnic at, but it's an actual public artwork. So it's interesting. Some people know of it, you know, just by like a place that you can sit, but it's like actually work that you're, or art that you're interacting with. So it's, I like little hidden gems like that. Sometimes there's art and you don't even really think of it that way. So.
Yeah, just like people stumble across your performances.
Yeah, yeah.
In the same way. Like, what is this? We were just rehearsing last night for a performance in a public place.
Uh-huh.
And I love how people just stop and take pictures and are interested. And I love that part of like specific work that you can reach.
Yeah.
It's the audience that wouldn't come to the black box to see.
Yeah. It always baffles me that we did a dance in public spaces class at Lotus, which was at the Asian American Resource Center. And the dancers were the warm up that they were doing was just rolling through the spine and coming back up. And, you know, to us, that's like, oh, they're just like warming their bodies up, but people would stop and just like watch. And it's the most bizarre thing that like what we see as like something.
Almost like a chore.
Yeah. Almost like a chore, but like a simple moving through the body is so interesting to, you know, non-dancers. So it just having class outdoor also like informs me of like my work and, you know, what I thought isn't interesting actually is. So I feel like I learn from the community that kind of passes by more than they may actually learn from us.
Yeah. Opening our eyes to see what might be mundane and boring to us is actually quite interesting.
Yeah.
For people. Just like, I don't know, you know, just like when you think you watch like somebody programming, you might find it super interesting even though you don't understand it. Or,
mm-hmm.
you know, somebody sweeping a street might be a dance for us, for them.
Yeah.
That it's just a boring, mundane thing. Yeah, no, that's super cool.
So why,
you know, why did you get interested in the site-specific outdoor work? What was the, is it the accidental audience that it's your biggest, or is there, like, a story?
Yeah. when I was in college, my junior year, I think, we had a tornado that destroyed our performing arts center. So we were kind of forced to create site-specific or dance film work.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, like, we still had to put on performances. So I had picked dance film work, and I did that for 2 years. And I loved it. I wrote my thesis on it. I wrote it a lot about, you know, the site itself. And I honestly haven't touched a stage since. I can't bring myself to go back to the stage because I just love creating movement from an environment, you know, learning about that environment. And so that's kind of how it came about. I haven't touched a stage since 2013.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm kind of scared.
Yeah, you know, it is. I mean, we went back to Black Box in January.
Uh-huh.
It is very, very different experience. Because also like that, maybe sometimes, depending on the space, but sometimes the role of an observer
mm-hmm.
and a performer is not that clear.
Yeah.
Also in a site specific.
Yeah.
You know?
I think if I ever do decide to go back to a stage, I'm going to have to look at it as a site-specific dance for the stage.
Yeah, no, it was, and we brought, like, our each site-specific into the stage.
Okay.
So that was kind of actually easier that way.
Uh-huh.
And we brought in physical objects from each location
okay.
and sounds and sort of tried to recreate sort
yeah.
of the site-specific inside.
Uh-huh.
So ours was even like kind of faking, not really making it for the theater or the stage.
Yeah, I just love environments. And I mean, the world is so different. Like each area of the world is so different. In Mississippi, I had worked with an abandoned schoolhouse. And then it was like this pocket of a outdoor room in downtown that like nobody knew about. and I only did dance film there, so it was still site specific, but it was for film. But just exploring areas and kind of recreating them or bringing awareness
mm-hmm.
Has become very important to me in my years.
Yeah. And even in Austin, I'm thinking like that you change location from other or different parts of the town, because I feel like we're going through this huge change in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the fact that you're bringing maybe the people who never go to this part of the town, maybe
yeah.
they will come to this part of the town and see, well, it wasn't that bad, or maybe this part of the town wasn't that isolated, or, you
mm-hmm.
know, it's separate things. So you're mixing the populations of...
Yeah,
and because
sure.
we're going through a huge gentrification in some
yeah.
areas, I think that's very important work in here,
mm-hmm.
in community-wise.
Yeah, for sure. The dance that we're doing at the skate park is going to be really interesting because it's the first site that we're using that was actually... that actually has another purpose.
Mm.
So, you know, technical rehearsals, planning that has been a little tricky because we don't want to interrupt, you know, skater time because we're using the deep bowl of the skate park. So only one skater can be in there at once. So we would be asking the skaters not to skate while we're dancing in it. That this performance, we think will be a great way to bring those who don't skate to the skate park, because you would never think to go there unless you were a skater.
Exactly.
You have no need to.
I don't even know where it is, you know? Like,
it's really cool. It's like a very sleek, modern playground.
skaters.
Yeah, for skaters. we're excited for that one. The deep bowl, the audience will sit around.
So you watch from above?
Yeah. So that's also something I've been, something new for me in the rehearsal process is like, I have like a little ladder sometimes I'll stand at the top of to kind of look down to see what the dance will look like. So kind of shifting perspective of like, a dance not taking place right in front of your eye level, but taking place below it has been an interesting endeavor to kind of explore.
That sounds great. Dance Waterloo also has a little educational part. You do storybook dance times.
Yes. It's called Storybook Dance Making.
Storybook Dance Making. So.
Yeah. We started it in September 2015. So shortly after we had formed. Storybook Dance Making is our oldest program that we have. And we work primarily at Austin Public Library, and then we also have a partner at Ingredients, which is a sustainable neighborhood grocery store. Both locations are so different, but
sure.
they're so great. At Ingredients, it's an outdoor class, so families can sit in the sunshine. We read a story, and then we... do a dance making activity. So we're teaching families how to choreograph together versus, you know, I do this movement, you follow, you put your hand in the air, we put our left hand in the air.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of teaching families how to problem solve together. And it's really interesting. The kids dance so much more when the parents dance too. And some parents get really, really into it, and it's amazing, like, the things that they come up with together, the choreography that they come up with together, where, like, you know, it's almost like seeing a family as, like, equal collaborators,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
A parent does oversee the child, but when it comes to, like, an artistic work, you know, you're still a collaborator. So I think it instills leadership in children, you know, to kind of bring their ideas to the table in front of their parents and have their parents, you know, be like, that's a great idea or something. And having parents say that that's a great idea, you know, kind of reinforces in children, like, it's okay to take, you know, leadership or learn how to be a leader.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, as a parent, I definitely love that idea. And you know, so often children want to take responsibility and they are not in your everyday life. As a parent, there are not that many times where you can totally fully give it. So those times when you can, that's wonderful. And the kids normally take it and fly with it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, those classes are a lot of fun. At Recycled Reads, there's, you know, it's a bookstore of recycled reads.
Like library books,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And so people are shopping around, and there's also a knitting group that meets at the same time. So it's all these little, mostly elderly women that are knitting while we have our storybook dance making class, and these people are shopping around. And everybody, like, loves to watch the class, you know, it's almost, the entire class is almost like a performance of its own, you know. Going back to just the warm-up.
Exactly.
For storybook dance making, our warm-up is, like, patting down your body and, like, you know, doing little tickles of your skin. And shoppers will stop and watch that because they think it's so cute. And, you know, it's a performance of its own.
It is.
You know, just working in public space is a performance, you know.
Everything becomes a performance.
Yeah,
yeah.
A class does. And and I think it's also kind of eliminating, you know, when we're in a studio setting, taking a class, we feel comfortable to make mistakes, you know, because nobody's really watching them. And then I think for dance, specifically dance in public spaces, because it's older adults that are taking the class, you know, when you're in a public space, like, are you comfortable making mistakes and kind of asking yourself that, but also responding by saying, you know, yes, I am comfortable in making mistakes because it's a part of the dance, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Every one of us makes mistakes.
Yeah. And doing mistakes outdoors, I mean, it's bound to happen. You'll trip over a rock.
So where do you see Dance Waterloo going? What is the future plans?
Many plans.
Awesome! Awesome.
We have already planned our next season, our 17-18 season.
Wow.
It's crazy. We've decided to move all of our programs into series-based. So it'll be like a six-week series of storybook dance making, a six-week series of dance in public spaces, so that we can dig deeper.
Mm-hmm. How often the storybook dance making happens?
Storybook dance making right now happens once a month at each location.
Okay, so basically twice.
Yeah. Twice a month,
mm-hmm.
For storybook dance making. And then the series, we'll be able to kind of scaffold our lessons. So we're really excited about making that change in the next upcoming year. What else are we doing? We have planned a performance for May of 2018. It'll be in collaboration with an integrated media designer and a composer. So we're really excited for that. We don't have too many details yet other than, you know, the skeleton plans for it. What else? Rachel and I sometimes, Rachel's the executive director of Dance Waterloo. We have, 5 to 10 year like meetings where we just kind of dream together and, you know, there's no limit in terms of what we can like think
That's
of.
Great.
Yeah. We have a rule. We can't talk about money in these meetings.
Yeah, that's a good rule.
Yeah. So it's kind of nice not to have to talk about money because we can just, things are limitless. So,
and so often you end up talking about money because that is a big part of it.
Right, for sure.
Mm-hmm. So it's nice to have. That sounds wonderful. I love that idea.
Yeah. And so we've talked about a space and what that could look like because it would still need to be a public space.
Yeah.
So it's we're having those conversations early of like if we had a space, how how would we interact with the public? How can we still keep our dances, you know, site specific? And so we're at the beginning stages of those conversations.
Oh, how exciting. Morgan, how do you do this all?
I don't know.
Because you apply fundings, you go and train yourself, you have a day job.
I ask myself that question all the time.
Did you ever imagine when you started that it's going to go like this?
No. I thought it would be, you know, I honestly thought I would just be, like, choreographing dances. But, that, like, I feel like what we're doing and where we're going is so much more meaningful, you know, than, like, I almost just want to, like, pat myself on the back and be like, you're so silly. Like, why did you ever think, like, just choreographing would be meaningful? You know, it's so much more meaningful to make connections with your audiences and really, like, learn about who they are as people. And your dancers learning, like, about them. And our dancers are so different and come from different backgrounds.
Oh, that's another thing. You don't have really a company dancers. You always have open auditions, which I thought that is so cool.
Yeah.
Or do you have company dancers?
We audition based on the project.
Yeah.
So we did an audition in February of this year for this project, and those dancers will stay with us from, you know, February until May, the end of the project.
Uh-huh. But then you will audition for your new site-specific work again, right?
Yeah.
I love that. I love that part of it.
Yeah, and we audition our company members, well, project members, project company. we audition them every time because the site always changes.
Yeah.
So, you know, somebody dancing on grass may not feel comfortable dancing on lobster rope.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's totally fine, you know. Yeah. That was a very rough surface.
Yeah, you guys had to wear gloves and everything.
Yeah, gloves. And actually for this performance, they're wearing helmets.
Yeah, yeah.
So keeping them protected.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That is a good idea.
In my rehearsals, I do a lot of, I create tasks or problems for my dancers to kind of like solve and work their way through. Like with Panorama Playground, which is the woven lobster rope dance that we did in January, I pulled out a twister board and we like played twister. And it was like left hand green, right hand red. And so, you know, we would have to set back up and walk through that. But the dancers created a phrase that was on one of the miniature hills that was based on, like, left hand green, right hand red, left foot in the air.
Okay.
So, I like working in that way.
So you don't show movements you created sort of together. You come up with tasks and ideas.
I would say, like, half and half.
Mm-hmm.
Half is, like, I will, like, show them my choreography and we'll work through, like, devising it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the other half will be, like, creating problems. I'm trying to think of one that we have that they've worked through recently, but I can't think of one. I almost, in every single artistic process, I always use the dancers' phone numbers. Like with the area code included, and they'll create like a phrase using their phone number. At Panorama Playground recently, we took somebody's phone number and they ran, if it was 850, which is my area code, they would run 8 times forward, 5 times back, and then they would freeze for a 0.
I see. Okay, okay. That's cool. So you use their phone number. Do you give the way to use it, or
that's a really
cool
way
one.
Changes.
Mm-hmm.
But each of my artistic processes since 2013, or maybe like 2012, maybe I've always used a phone number in some aspect, which is just something that I like to link with my works. Although, like, it doesn't
look the same at all. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, mm-hmm. But you have that. That's like Morgan's.
Yeah, the phone number dance. Yeah, or phone number phrase or something.
Yeah, yeah. That is cool. So I like that. Well, and like Hurly Burly, there was a lot of problems to be solved.
Yeah, for
so,
sure.
Yeah. What definitely. Was the art installation? Who did it?
Orly Ganger.
Okay.
Is the artist of that installation. It was really funny. One time we were doing like a drone footage of some dancing early morning, and she was actually at the installation, and we hadn't met her yet. We had only been in email communication with her, and she after we finished the drone footage and we're just talking, she was like, are you guys Dance Waterloo? And we're like, yes, who are you? And she said that she was Orly, and we were like, oh my gosh, and just like swallowed her in hugs because we love her work so much. But yeah, it was funny. We were like talking about her work and she was right there.
That is funny.
Yeah.
It's so wonderful. Did she get to, so she watched the rehearsal?
At that one, it was just Rachel and I, so we weren't in a rehearsal. We were just doing drone footage, but, she did watch, and,
did you send her a video of the final?
I actually was just thinking I need to do that.
Yeah.
She's seen photos, though.
Mm-hmm.
She actually made a comment that the dancers looked like corn.
Oh. I love it.
And I never even thought about that, but the costumes were green and yellow.
I never made that connection either.
Yeah.
It's
funny.
That is funny. Well, there you go. People see different things.
Yeah, different things.
And her art definitely was interesting. So she knitted from old lobster robes, right?
Yeah, recycled lobster rope. And that installation, or the materials used, had actually been used elsewhere here in Austin for an installation that she did. That was the recycled lobster rope.
I see. And if you want to see pictures of Dance Waterloo's dance at Hurly Burly, do you have a website? You do?
Yes. I'm trying to think if we have any pictures. I don't think we have any pictures up yet of that performance. But you can look on Instagram or Facebook. At Dance Waterloo on Instagram, and then facebook.com/dancewaterloo.
Mm-hmm. And your website is?
dancewaterloo.org.
Okay. So you can see more of pictures of you guys there.
Yeah, and I think we have a couple of videos on the website too, and our calendar is listed. You can sign up for our email list and stuff like that.
That's awesome. Morgan, I cannot wait to see what else you cook up. That is just... You know, Morgan and I actually met. She took part in the Body Shift performance workshop. You were newly Austinite at that time.
Yeah, it was like only like 3 months in here.
Yes. And then the next time I heard from her, she had a dance company.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
But the work that, you know, working with Body Shift in that workshop, it was so, you know, that was like my first insider to like Austin dance here, and that was very informing, you know, to just like my individual artistic philosophy, and you know, like a pivotal moment in my art career.
Nice, I like to hear that.
I'm loving,
and you work at UT.
Loving living here. Yes, I am administrative assistant for admissions for fine arts. So
wow.
I'm staying in the arts field, which is great. My work is very supportive of Waterloo, and there's actually some crossover sometimes, which is nice, you know. And there's a lot of resources there that, you know, like tons and tons of books, and sometimes I'll sneak away to the library to look at some site-specific dance books.
Yeah. Anyone that you can recommend?
Let me think. I can't think of any off the top of my head. But in terms of, like, art-related books, I actually just wrote about this yesterday. Yes And, which is more of like a theater improvisational book, but it talks about how collaboration is essential to any workforce. And Walking on Water by Madeleine L'Engle. She talks about how the art making process is almost a spiritual process, and how like you have to like sacrifice yourself for your work. And that's a very pioneering book for me. And then I'm trying to think of another. Wabi Sabi, which is about Japanese, it's about like a Japanese philosophy that like imperfections and mistakes are like a part of the art process and what make it so great. And that those three books have been like so influential to me.
Awesome. I love that. I love reading. I love book called Moving Sites. It's about
Moving Sites. Okay.
So specific work. There's another one that I cannot think of the name right now.
I know. It's
right I can see the cover of the book in my head, but I can't think of it. But they are really good site-specific dance books. If any listeners have any good books, let us know.
Yeah.
Anything to recommend.
Summer's coming up. I want a summer reading.
There you go. give us a dance, art, inspirational, site-specific, educational dance book reading list.
Yes.
Right. All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Morgan, what are you going to do for the rest of the day?
I am taking a work-from-home day.
So oh,
I'm gonna,
nice.
Work outside.
It's a great weather here in Austin.
Yeah, it is. Beautiful spring.
And the name of the book of the site-specific work, dance work that I forgot, which I can't believe that I forgot the name, is of course called Side Dance, Choreographers and the Lure of Alternative Spaces. So check out that book as well. It's really, really interesting read.